I'll bet all of our listeners have heard of Doctors Without Borders. And I'll bet not many of you have heard of another organization, which is called Engineers Without Borders. Good evening. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm your host, John Pierce. And doing our engineering this evening, Neil Heaver, our Director of Operations here at WDIY, serving the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Our topic this evening, Engineers Without Borders. And my two guests are very active in this organization. They're both engineers. One of them is Herb Klotz, and the other one is Al Ottinger. Talk a little bit about Herb and his background. He's a charter member and past president of Engineers Without Borders. Now, you very, it flows right off your tongue to say EWB, correct?
Yes.
Maybe by the time this broadcast is over, our listeners will also know what that means.
Okay.
Lehigh Valley Professionals Chapter, which started in 2008. Herb Klotz is currently a member of both the Sierra Leone and Dominican Republic International Project teams and has visited both locations multiple times as a member of assessment and implementation teams for water, sanitation, building, and solar electrical projects. That's a mouthful, Herb.
Mm-hmm.
And keeps you busy when you're there.
Correct? Oh, yeah. You're not kidding. We are 24/7. It's a lot of fun, but it's a lot of work, too.
There you go. If you can have fun while you're doing work, you're in a good spot.
Yes.
Huh? Mm-hmm. Herb is also a member of the Allentown West Rotary Club and was recently selected to become Rotary District Governor for clubs in five eastern Pennsylvania counties. That's in 2019 and 2020. Herb, how many clubs are involved in this whole eastern PA area?
Well, I mean, there's lots of Rotary clubs, but in our district, we have currently have 43 Rotary clubs. They're in five counties: Northampton, Lehigh, Berks, Bucks, and Montgomery. And we're starting two new ones. So actually, we're going to be starting a new Rotary club. They're going to be chartering in Whitehall at the end of March. Actually, probably right before this interview is aired.
Well, with all those clubs under your purview, it's almost a full-time job, isn't it?
Yes.
That will
be a full-time job. That will be a full-time job.
For 2019 and 20. You're not going to have many trips to Sierra Leone or to the Dominican Republic.
Probably not.
Herb earned his chemical engineering degrees from NJIT, Bachelor of Science, and Lehigh University, Master of Science. Herb is a chemical engineer by training and spent his entire 34-year career at Air Products in research and development, and he retired in 2014. In his last 15 years at Air Products, Herb worked in management as a research director. So that's Herb Klotz. And along with him today to talk about Engineers Without Borders is his partner, and I should say colleague in this effort, Al Ottinger. He's a graduate of William Allen High School. You are a former canary, sir.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Do you know why they're called the Canaries?
No.
Liberty High School is the hurricane. The one creature that survives in a hurricane is the canary.
I didn't know that.
There you go.
Thank you.
And Lehigh University, he has a Bachelor of Science in Metallurgy and Material Engineering. So you are local right from the get-go,
yep.
William Allen and Lehigh. Were you born here in the Lehigh Valley?
I was.
See? And you're doing this interview right here in the Lehigh Valley.
Yes.
And yet you have some interest in Africa and Central America.
Yes.
Also. Mm-hmm. And Herb, I didn't ask you where you're from originally.
I'm originally from Rockland County in New York State, so just north of New York City.
All right, just so our listeners don't get confused, your last name Klotz, K-L-O-T-Z, is not Dutchy.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is, but I'm not from this area.
Not from this area. All right, is it more Netherlands or is it more Germany?
No, it's German.
It's German.
It's absolutely German.
Back to Al Ottinger. In 1981, as one of the founding partners of QIC Incorporated, Al was instrumental in developing this company as a respected manufacturer of precision castings for critical applications. After over 20 prosperous years, The decision to sell the business to a competitor enabled the pursuit of other priorities in career and life. So, Al, what were some of these other priorities that you got into?
Working with other business owners as a business coach is my career segment of it. But involvement in international mission trips has been another part of it. I've been involved in Jamaica with actually a medical group through a good friend of mine who's a dentist for, I believe it's 13 years now. We've been down there. We go every February. And then partially because of that and a common friend, got involved in this Dominican project as well.
Very smart people to go to Jamaica in February.
Yes.
There's an American Dental Association, I think it was the Chicago Dental Association, that had its annual meeting in Chicago in February. And I said, why? Why don't you join with Al Ottinger and go to Jamaica instead, right? Well, Al has favorably impacted many diverse businesses as a business coach and consultant. He has become extensively involved in volunteering in men's ministry at his church, Fleetwood Rotary Club, and Engineers Without Borders. This volunteer work enables him to be involved in serving locally and internationally in mission work. So it's obviously a passion of yours, coming from the Lehigh Valley and spreading your wings and going out to help folks very, very far from where we are.
Yes.
Right now, let's just give a shout out to Chris Horniman, who is the one who actually put me in touch with the two of you. Now, what is Chris's role?
Well, Chris is a relatively a new member of Engineers Without Borders. I think he's been involved now for a little more than 2 years, and he's actually gone on trips to both the Sierra Leone and the Dominican Republic. In the case of the Dominican, he went on an assessment trip, one of our, I think it might have been our first assessment
yes.
trip. And then last March, he was on a trip with me and several others when we went to Sierra Leone to install solar power in the administrative buildings at the school.
This must really be exciting work when you go to another country and you know that you're going to leave that place a little bit better than it was when you arrived.
It is. Right? It yes. really is. Absolutely.
Now, one of the questions that we have, well, let's get first to the very most important question, and that is, what is the organization called Engineers Without Borders? What are the objectives here?
Well, Engineers Without Borders is a relatively new organization. It was founded in 2002 at the University of Colorado in Boulder. And it now has nearly 14,000 members. It has over 200 chapters in the United States. They're both college and professional. Now, we're members of the Lehigh Valley Professionals chapter, but there's also a Lehigh University chapter and a Lafayette College chapter in the Lehigh Valley. So the mission of the Engineers Without Borders is to partner with communities in developing nations and implement sustainable engineering solutions to improve their quality of life. And when we talk about sustainable, what we really mean is 10, 20 years after we leave, everything that we've done is still being used. So that's our goal. So some of that's engineering, but a lot of that is about working with the people in that community to make that
a more holistic
approach
Absolutely. Than just the mechanical part.
And it's fundamental that collaboratively they take ownership of this, both financially and in the integrated design, so that it's their systems, which makes
sense. So you're teaching them to maintain what you – to help you put in the installation and then to maintain afterwards?
Oh, they put it in. We don't typically put it in. It's mostly – as far as who actually does the work, it's people in the community and professionals in the community. But teaching them to maintain is really important. A lot of times in these different third world countries, especially based on our experiences in Africa, maintenance is not part of their culture at all. and to teach people how to maintain things is really, really important. And as Al said, ownership is really important as well. So making sure that when we leave, that the community owns the project, as opposed to Engineers Without Borders owns the project. And, oh, it broke, and maybe they'll come back and fix it.
Okay, okay? That's what you don't want.
We don't want that, right? Absolutely not. And so that's something that goes on throughout the entire process of building. So part of that is about having them actually do the work, and part of it is actually having them pay for part of it as well. So it goes without saying that they need to raise all the money for maintenance and operation of the system. So we have to make sure of that. But a couple of years ago, Engineers Without Borders instituted another rule which said that at least 5% of the cost of what you're installing has to be paid by the community in cash, not in labor, in cash.
And how do those communities go about fundraising?
Well, there's different ways. I'll mention how the we have a, like I said, we have a project in Sierra Leone where we're helping a school, and the way they fundraise is they have a small student fee. It's an infrastructure fee, and they put that in place so that every term, in addition to their school fees, they pay an extra, I mean, it comes to an extra $1 or $2 a term that each student at the school pays. And so now the school has the money that it needs to maintain and operate and also to pay this 5%. Now, there's some logic to the 5% as well. And so why 5%? The logic to the 5% is that if the community can't raise that amount of money, then we probably shouldn't do the project. And the reason why is because it's probably going to cost about 5% to maintain and operate that system that we're putting in place. So if they can't afford that, then we should be looking for a different solution for that community.
This is Engineers Without Borders. Herb Klotz and Al Ottinger are my guests this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse. This is an organization of which I knew nothing until we prepared for this interview. So it's good to put the word out there that there is such a thing called Engineers Without Borders. And you said, Herb, that it began in Boulder, Colorado in
2002.
All right.
So it's only 15 years old.
Relatively new.
Yeah.
And you two have, you two and your organization have zeroed in on two countries, one in Africa, one in Central America. Why these particular two countries?
Okay. Well, that's an interesting question. Okay. And so to answer that, I think we need to kind of go back to some of the history. So we started our chapter, our particular chapter, chartered in 2008.
And now this is Lehigh Valley
Professionals. Our Lehigh Valley Professionals chartered in 2008. During our first year, we recognized very quickly that we needed to have a project or we were going to lose our members. We currently have about 30 to 40 members in our chapter. So where were we going to find a project? And we really didn't know how to do it. But it turned out that the Engineers Without Borders USA had projects that were looking for chapters to fulfill. And one of those projects was in Sierra Leone. And it just so happened that the other thing that was really good about this initial project was that it came with a $10,000 Boeing grant.
Mm-hmm.
And engineers are really good at engineering, but we really hadn't learned how to do fundraising yet. And so $10,000 was a great start.
Well, let me ask you right now, have you learned a lot about fundraising?
Yes, we have.
Do you spend a lot of your time fundraising?
We spend enough of it, but I mean, part of it is our partnership with Rotary has been very successful. And And in about a month, we're going to have a fundraiser, and maybe we can talk about that a little bit later. So there's three or four ways that we focus on raising money for our project.
So this is a major project then for Rotary Club.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I was going to say this: Engineers Without Borders is not exclusively engineers. So one of the reasons we like people with different skills is to assist in the marketing mm-hmm. fundraising mm-hmm. aspect as well. So it's not mm-hmm. totally just engineers exclusively.
Right. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. That's an interesting point, because by the title Engineers Without Borders, I would assume that you're looking specifically for engineers, mm-hmm. not the case. And by the way, perhaps that's not the case for Doctors Without Borders. They mm-hmm. need other personnel also.
Sure. Absolutely.
Besides just physicians.
Absolutely. All right, let me go back to answering your question. And so that's how we got involved with our first project, our Sierra Leone projects. And it just so happens that we're working with the Centennial School in Sierra Leone, and it just so happens that one of the alumni is a minister in Philadelphia.
Oh.
And he helps us, and he actually goes with us on every single trip that we do going to Sierra Leone. His name is Joe Abu, and
He's
based in Philadelphia.
But he is from Sierra Leone.
He's from Sierra Leone. Well, he's an alumni of the school. So the Centennial School, he went to that school as a child.
And that's in Sierra Leone.
Yep.
What are the grades that it covers?
It's a secondary school. It covers grades 7 to 12. And there are when we started, there were about 1,200 students at the school. Mm-hmm. Now there are about 1,700 students.
Ooh, it's growing.
Yes, because of success. Things have gotten a lot better there since we've been working with them.
Well, that's a really interesting connection that you have between the eastern U.S. and Sierra Leone.
Yeah.
Now, and what about
the Dominican
Republic?
So about 4 years ago, we had our successful project in Sierra Leone. We've been going there for several years. About 4 years ago, our then EWB president, Gary Engelhart, challenged us to identify a second project a little closer to home. And that's how we got involved with the Dominican. I'll let Al can talk a little bit to that.
Right. I think specifically the Caribbean was targeted. It wasn't, I don't think, established initially that it was going to be Dominican. But it rapidly evolved into that because of Pastor Eddie Ibar, who has a congregation in the Allentown area. He is of Dominican descent, was born there. But he also has two active children's ministries in the Dominican Republic. So through some mutual contacts, that's when I got involved, having the experience in Jamaica. It was felt applicable, got my interest. And we made the assessment trip, I think it was early 2014, about that, to the northwest part of the Dominican Republic, which is where Pastor Eddie Ibar's ministries are. So we were able to stay, be housed there, and travel out into the community. And he, of course, had some contacts. So I think we looked at four prospective projects in that region through Pastor Eddie. And then through a vetting process, we selected the communities of Cabeza de Toro and Machete, which are in that northwest region of the Dominican.
And Reverend Ibar is based in Allentown?
Yes. Yeah,
yeah. But, so you have one in Philadelphia, one in Allentown for each of the countries?
Yes.
And they go with us on every trip? Yeah. So there you go. So our first project, the project kind of chose us, and the second project, we got more experience, and so we figured out.
Footnote, EWB is not a faith-based organization, but it can take on that flavor because of our connections.
Yes.
As is Rotary is not faith-based as well.
Yeah, neither are.
Well, my guests this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse are Herb Klotz and Al Ottinger, very active in Engineers Without Borders, and that's our topic this evening. It's time for us to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to ask them about some of the nitty-gritty of these trips that they make to Africa and to Central America. Stay with us. We'll be back in 60 seconds.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
On the webpage for Engineers Without Borders, I found that we have these organizations called UPenn, Drexel, Princeton, Philadelphia, and Lehigh. And you said that Lafayette should be in there, too. Now, what they say on the website is unleashing great minds on great problems. So, Al, I guess what you're saying is our two guests this evening are two of the great minds. Is that a fair statement?
No.
Well, that's what the website says. So it says,
we're just doing our best.
Yeah, and they have some very pretty scenes of Africa, I take it, on the website. Mm-hmm. And one of them says, give water, give hope. And one says, spread joy across the globe. That sounds quasi-religious. Mm-hmm. Huh? Mm-hmm. And then you can build better futures. Wow, great positive statements that they have on the website. Engineers Without Borders USA builds a better world through engineering projects that empower communities to meet their basic human needs and equip leaders to solve the world's most pressing challenges. So, Herb, it's kind of what you mentioned before, that you're not there to do a project for the people.
Not at all.
You're there to help them get it started, and then after that, to sustain it.
Exactly.
And I was really interested in your comment that the culture in other parts of the world does not necessarily include the idea of sustaining.
No.
So when you talk to them, do you have to be talking in terms of 5 years and 10 years from now, or do you keep it to, for the next year, this is what you're going to need?
Typically, we're focused on what they need to do in the short term, you know, the specific question. But one of the things that happens when we, as an Engineers Without Border chapter, takes on a project, another part of the sustainability is when we commit to a community, as long as the community holds up their end of the bargain, we've committed for a minimum of 5 years. So we will not, you know, so part of the sustainability is the year after year training. In the case of the Sierra Leone project, we've been there for 8. And we're just finishing up now. We've gone on 9 trips to Sierra Leone, and we're finishing up our project with the school, and we're actually going to be starting a second project in the same town. So we're not really leaving. So our goal is we want to stay there even longer, so that we're there to as consultants, if you will. But we're not going to do any more with new projects at the school, but we want to be there to help them out if they need maintenance and things like that.
And when you go to Sierra Leone, do you always go the same month of the year?
Well, we always go during the dry season. Okay, so the dry season starts around November, December, and lasts until May. So you basically have 6 months of dry season, 6 months of wet season. So we've gone in as early as Thanksgiving and as late as mid-April. But in between there, those are the times when we go.
And you don't kind of want to go in the wet season merely because the rain hampers what you can do?
Hampers what you can do. It's about 100 miles on a dirt road, and the roads aren't too good. And yeah, So yeah, it's about a, it's
you get
a,
it, you get stuck in mud.
It's a very different world than we live in. Let's just put it that way.
Right. And Al, what about the other project, the one in the Dominican Republic? Do you go there every year also?
We've gotten there, I think, every year, but it's not the same time of year. I think the biggest thing driving timing there is avoiding hurricane season, because that's a factor. There are rainy seasons, but they're not as pronounced. But to your point, the water in these third world countries is really a game changer, because they don't have access. And even just to jump on the maintenance piece, I think that's about resources. They don't have a lot to begin with, so that's, I think, part of why there's nothing to maintain in their culture. In the Dominican, they're literally drawing water out of the river and transporting it sometimes by burrow to the houses at this point. Nothing to maintain there. Some folks have pumps and so forth. So anyway, but it's not a hard stretch to get them to understand, okay, this is going to change the game, the way you get water, so you need to maintain it.
Yes. On the other hand, talking about maintenance and sustaining things, in other countries, particularly poor countries, you find older automobiles, and they find a way to sustain mm-hmm. them because they don't have the money to buy new ones. Right. So that's almost a contradictory statement mm-hmm. to their mentality about sustaining.
Mm-hmm. Right. Older automobiles tend to be simpler, and they tend to be, able to be repaired. And in fact, you see that in Sierra Leone as well.
I mean, and many, many people know how to repair them too.
Yes, they
simply have to learn, because
right.
you don't have a garage to go to
mm-hmm.
two blocks
not.
Away.
Exactly.
Yeah. And a lot of times it's interesting, you'll see in Sierra Leone, you'll see trucks broken down on the side of the road, right? And it's because they weren't maintained. And so now it's time to maintain them. And they'll literally maintain them right there, well, repair them, if you will, on the side of the road.
Sure.
So they basically wait until they break, and
the hood goes up.
The hood goes up, and it might be there for 2 weeks, yeah. but eventually it'll get repaired and it'll start up again. That's the mentality.
It's not related to EWB, but I actually was a participant in a breakdown in the middle of Africa years ago, and it just reminds me. Fortunately, we got back up on the road that night, but it was, as Herb's describing, it was a lot of creativity and ingenuity and a good neighbor.
Were you in a truck?
Land Rover. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And
were you able to help him out with that,
Adam? Absolutely not at all. That was very difficult for being a type A. Mm-hmm. But the conversation was in Swahili, and they were not interested. But we got back.
Yeah, we're here.
Now, when you travel to the foreign countries, what are your living conditions like? Do the locals put you up somewhere? Is it a house? Is it a hotel?
Pastor Eddie's facilities are modest. One case, it's a house in the city of Santiago, which is actually, I think, 500,000 people, rather bustling city, very noisy accommodations, comfortable running water, nothing luxurious. Fortunately, the climate in the Dominican is very hospitable year-round. And then when we go out closer to the communities where we're working, he has another facility there that he's developing really kind of as a community for the organization. So there's bunk rooms and a common room with a kitchen. And usually he'll provide some folks to cook for us, local fare. And it's comfortable.
How do you get along with the Dominican cooking?
Is that
to your liking?
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Not the spicy that we get from Mexico?
No.
No. Okay. That's a myth out there that any Spanish-speaking country is like Mexican cooking, and it's just
no. Dominican is not.
No. And when you do these trips, make these trips to the Dominican Republic, how many of you are going at a time? Do you go with a couple of buddies? Or
typically, it's been 4 to 6, and sometimes it's driven by the skill sets needed. Transportation becomes a factor, really, when you're 4 is a stretch with baggage and tools. In one vehicle, so six is comfortable in two vehicles. And in the Dominican, Pastor Eddie accommodates us coordinating local transportation for us, which we don't want to drive there because of the condition of the roads and the vehicles.
So now, in Sierra Leone, there is no electric grid in the whole country. Okay? Now, there might be little sections of the capital city of Freetown where there's electricity, but where we go, which is 150 miles from the city, trust me, there is no electric grid. So we stay in a guest house, so there's five or six of us in a guest house, and they'll turn the generator on around dusk, which is around 7 p.m., and hopefully the generator will work, and we'll have fans blowing on us because it's 90 degrees. And in the middle of the night, it might go down to 75. And usually around, and so we're feverishly charging all of our different devices while the electricity's on with the generator. And
what do you mean by devices?
Oh, our cell phones and things like that. So it's an interesting situation, right? Okay. There's no electric grid, but 40% of the people have cell phones.
40%? Yeah. That's huge for what you're describing.
Yes. Because there's no telephone infrastructure, so the cell phone infrastructure has grown up there.
So we are so spoiled that at any time of night or day, we can plug in our gizmos and get them to recharge, whereas the people, everyone living in that kind of a situation in Sierra Leone would have to wait until there is electricity during that
part
of the day.
Well, no, you have to realize that basically what they do is they go to a place where a charging station where they'll pay a smart amount. I mean, you have to realize we're living in luxury.
Absolutely.
Right? So this idea of having a generator at night, most families do not have that. So about 2 o'clock in the morning, the power will go off because the generator ran out of gas. Now we could pay extra. Sometimes we pay extra so that we have a fan blowing on us all night. And then usually around 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning, they'll turn on the power for another hour so we can, you know, get ready in the morning and that kind of thing. But then the power goes off and it's off until the next night. Now, where does the food come from? Well, the food is cooked on fires. So all the food that you eat, virtually all the food that you eat in Sierra Leone is cooked on a fire outside.
What would you say about the cuisine in Sierra Leone?
Well, the cuisine is quite spicy, and it's very, very, very different from anything you've had here.
Okay, even Mexican?
Very different from Mexican, okay. A lot of things are cooked in palm oil. And you know, a lot of rice, they have a root vegetable called cassava, which is a pretty common food, and very spicy. So they have to kind of tone down the spices for the Americans because it's just too spicy.
And again, when you go to Sierra Leone, are you accompanied by two or three others?
Yes, typically we'll take four to six people on a trip. But the smallest group I've been with is three. The largest one was six. And so you can see with 3 to 6 people, we're not going to do all the work. I mean, a great example is one of our trips, in 2 weeks, we laid, I think, 1,800 feet of pipe to put in a water distribution system. You know, we have a solar-powered water distribution system throughout the school at the Centennial. Well, we obviously didn't do that work. I think there were three people that went on that trip. We supervised.
And how many other people would you estimate were involved in
that? Probably about 80. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And lots of the students from the school, you know, they were digging the trenches. And then we would hire the plumber, who would be the professional, to make sure that everything got plumbed up correctly. And that sort of thing. But that's a good example of how a project works.
And how you encourage the others, and they way outnumber you because you're only three or four people.
Right.
Is that the same in the Dominican Republic?
Yes. We're not that far along in our project, but we're going to use that model.
Mm-hmm. And as you see it, how many people would you think would be involved? Herb said about 80 for that particular.
Well, that one was probably the most mm-hmm. of all of them. It varies.
Yeah. Okay. Envisioning this, I think it will involve at least that many over the course of the project. Mm-hmm. We'll be working through our partner Rotary Club to really secure the labor.
So there's a Rotary Club there in the Dominican Republic.
Yes. Mm-hmm. If now's a good time. That's one of the keys, as Herb said. In the case of the Dominican, it's a $50,000 Rotary Global Grant, which is funding a significant part of the $75,000 EWB LVP project cost. And a simple version of the Rotary Global Grant is we have the partner club there, the host club, in the Dominican nearby. And then my Fleetwood Club is the international partner, and we've partnered with Herb's Club and three or so other clubs in the district. Altogether, the clubs are responsible for coming up with $25,000 U.S., and then Rotary International will match that. And they have criteria, which is very similar to the EWB approval criteria. Again, focusing on sustainability.
And so for whatever other funds you need to reach, you said $75,000, then you do fundraising for that.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. So I mentioned a while back about the fundraising and how we got that $10,000 grant. Pretty early on in our work with Engineers Without Borders, we learned about Rotary. We didn't really know. I was not a Rotarian at that point in time. I was just involved with the with Engineers Without Borders, and we learned that basically with these kinds of projects, you need to find organizations that have similar goals, and when you can find that, you have a great opportunity to work together. And Rotary is a tremendous organization, with 1.2 million Rotarians around the world, and we've done two global grants at our school in Sierra Leone, one for drilling a well and installing classroom lighting, and one for some more solar powered work, but also for education. So the neat thing about Rotary, the neat thing about this partnership is, Engineers Without Borders, we do infrastructure. That's what we do. That's our scope. If it's not infrastructure, we don't do it. But Rotary does a lot more than just infrastructure. They'll do education. So it's a great complement. So not only have we done the infrastructure, last year we brought two educators from the Northwestern School District with us on our trip. So we had six people, and two of them were from Northwestern School District.
Terrific.
Yeah. And this year, in about a month, the principal of the school is coming to the United States.
My guests this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse are Herb Klotz and Al Ottinger. It's time for us to take another break.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, call 610-694-8100, extension 6, or visit our website, wdiy.org.
Engineers Without Borders has over 16,000 members working with communities to find appropriate solutions for water supply, sanitation, energy, agriculture, civil works, and structures. That's quite a plateful. And this evening, Herb Klotz, who is Rotary Liaison for Engineers Without Borders, and Al Ottinger, who is co-leader for the Dominican Republic Project, are my guests on Lehigh Valley Discourse. Engineers Without Borders USA, 686 community-driven projects in 42 countries, and we're talking about two of those 42 this evening. And they have impacted more than 2.5 million lives. Mm-hmm. Wow. These are really positive contributions that you all are making to the world. And I know that that is really the satisfaction of knowing that is your pay.
It absolutely is.
When you go on these projects, go abroad as volunteers, do you pay your own way, or has that been paid by the $75,000 that you talked about
so
before?
So the answer to that, we've wrestled with that. And what the conclusion that we've come to, many of us do pay our own way, okay? But that's not the most important thing, right? The most important thing is to make sure that we have the right qualified people go on these trips, all right? And if it turns out that the person who is the right qualified person is not able to pay, then it comes out of the funding. So the answer is yes and no. Some of us pay our own way. Some of us aren't able to. So, but again, we want the right people to go on these trips.
Let's talk about that a little bit, because I have something here that says skills include all types of engineering. Well, that's obvious. Mm-hmm. The two of you come from that end, as well as biology, chemistry, health sciences, social sciences, languages, and communications.
Absolutely.
You can use all of this kind of mm-hmm. skill,
yes,
all these skills in what you do.
Yep.
You do not need to be an engineer to join.
That's exactly right.
So this brings us to the point, how do people get in touch with you, Herb, okay, if they want to learn more about Engineers Without
sure.
Borders,
well,
Lehigh Valley?
The easiest way for folks to learn more about our organization is to go to our website or our Facebook page. Our website is www.ewb-lvp.org, and there are links there with different connections for different, you know, if you're interested in volunteering, if you're interested in learning more. We often have when our next meeting is going to be, those kinds of things out on the website. We also have, we're also on Facebook under EWB-Lehigh Valley Professional. So you can find us there on Facebook as well.
And you meet monthly?
Do we meet monthly?
That's what the website says.
Okay, loosely. But okay, honestly, we really focus. We do meet monthly. We have a monthly meeting where where you could come to learn about, from an executive team point of view, what we do. But really, what we really focus on is we have project team meetings. So we really focus on, like the Sierra Leone team will meet, you know, especially if they're going to be traveling, and they may not meet monthly. They might meet weekly because we've got to get ready for
getting
a trip.
Ready for that trip.
Right. So it really depends.
I would agree with Herb's assessment. It's more task oriented. And the other thing that fits in with that piece is people skills are important because of the way we do work so closely with the communities. That's another aspect for that to happen. And the other thing that's worked well as far as people getting involved, we've gone out and sought certain skills for a segment of the project. If we don't have that already in our club chapter, we will go out and start to put the word out, somebody that can do piping or something. And people seem to respond well to becoming involved for a specific segment of the project.
Exactly.
And for the Dominican Republic, obviously you're dealing with Spanish as far as language.
Yes.
And for Sierra Leone, it's Swahili.
It's English.
It's English.
Yes, the official language of Sierra Leone is English, and what is taught at the Centennial School is English.
So,
but they have their native language. So their native language is Mende. But the official language of the country is English.
So you're going to be dealing with locals who are pretty good at English.
Yes, they have a different accent than we do.
Right.
Or maybe a better way to say it is, we have a different accent than they do.
Yes. There you go, depending on whose point of view. And so you could be speaking to them just the way you're speaking to us now over
yes.
the radio, and they would understand?
Yes.
Most of them?
Yes.
And okay. And what about in the Dominican Republic? How is the level of English there?
Well, we are not real strong, but we're blessed with a number of translators that are in the village that are bilingual. And
and obviously it's not an official language, therefore you don't expect the same thing in the Dominican Republic that you would in Sierra Leone. Herb, you were talking to us about, we talked a little bit about your living conditions when you go down there, and off the air you told about what it's like to take a shower in Sierra Leone. So paint that picture for us.
Oh, sure. Okay. Well, basically our experience, most of the time when we go to Sierra Leone, the way we take a shower is we have two buckets. We have a big bucket and we have a small bucket. And the small bucket is for washing. So it's more like a bowl, and you'll use that to get yourself wet, and you have a little soap. And then the big bucket is for, you know, pour it on your head and get yourself clean. And believe me, it feels good at the end of the day when it's 95 and humid.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Because of the heat, do you have problems sleeping at night?
Well, basically, we have a fan blowing on us. And honestly, we're tired because we work. We get up at 6 in the morning, and we work till 10 at night.
Ooh.
And, basically, we work until it's dark, and then we plan
for the
next day because we don't have extra days.
And how many days are you there typically?
Typically 2 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks. We've found that that's about the right amount of time that we can, especially if you're working, that's about all you can take off. And so it's typically 2 to 2.5 weeks.
Now, we're talking about Sierra Leone in this case. Do you have any time to go touring, to see sites?
We'll typically put a day in there to do something extra. We build extra time into our schedule because we know things are going to go wrong. But sometimes we'll get an extra day. I know the last trip they went on, there's a zoo or a monkey preserve in Freetown, and I know they spent a day and they went to the monkey preserve
like to
in Freetown. there's not a lot of safari kind of things in Sierra Leone. It's the wrong, you know, that's more Tanzania, Kenya, not the western part.
And what about in the Dominican Republic?
Our typical trips have been 10 to 12 days. One of the real blessings is it's a 4-hour direct flight from Newark or JFK to Santiago, where we fly into. So that cuts down greatly.
You go nonstop?
Yes. Yes.
And typically that would be from JFK airport.
Mm-hmm. I think we were able to do it from Newark.
You can
Newark
do it from Newark also.
Yeah, you can
do it from Newark.
But to go to Sierra Leone,
is about a 3-day trip to get to the village. So, I mean, it takes us, you know,
Where does the plane stop?
You fly to Brussels, then you fly to Sierra Leone, and it's basically 6 to 7 hour flights, and then you stay overnight in Freetown, and then you have a full day drive to Matru, which is where the school is. So you can't make those trips short. You've got to make them long enough because it's a lot of time just to get there and to get back.
Exactly. And when you arrive, my guess is the first day you just need to relax and get your feet under you. Is that?
No.
See, I'm talking to engineers, that's not
what
you're all about.
Usually what happens. No. Almost every day is scripted, and what do we have to do? Typically, sometimes we'll have to spend an extra day in Freetown because it's the capital city, and we're just buying a lot of supplies that we need when we get to Matru. So we're buying a lot of the electrical supplies or different things.
And you said it's a large city.
Yeah, it's a large city. It's about 1.2 million or something like that.
Would some of the people in the shops where you're making these purchases recognize you from last year? And know that that's why you're here?
Probably not, but they know we're not from Sierra Leone. I don't know how they tell. But But they know.
Nothing obvious about right?
They know we're not from Sierra Leone.
And in the place where you go in the Dominican Republic, Al, it's a small town, I presume.
Well, we usually start and end in Santiago, which is about 500,000 people. Same kind of thing, maybe provisioning and so forth. And then when we travel, it's about an hour and a half drive to the area where we're working. It's very remote from there.
Do you ever have difficulty when you're instructing people as to how to set up something or how to maintain it that they don't quite get the concept and you have to go over and over again?
Absolutely.
Sure. That's almost a given?
It's almost a given that you're going to have to do things multiple times. And sometimes we're going to have to do it, and then a year later we're going to have to do it again, and a year later we're going to. But I am really happy to say that everything, we've taken 9 trips to the Centennial School, and we have installed running water, we've installed toilets, we've installed, we've put a new roof on a building, we've put solar-powered electrical in multiple buildings now, and pretty much everything that's been installed is still in working order. So mm-hmm. that's a real
After
plus.
How many years?
Well, we started in 2011, so each year we'll do a little bit more. So that's a real plus. So they really are serious. So one of the things that happened, I mentioned a while back that they collect money from a student fee. Well, one of the things they did about 3 years ago, was they hired a maintenance technician, which is a real foreign concept. Someone whose full-time job it is to maintain these things. And so we've trained him, and he is taking care of all the things, and they have the money to pay him.
Did he do that kind of work before, or was this just...
He was very handy guy in town, basically, is who he was. So mm-hmm. he was very handy. He was actually one of the teachers at the school. And he was very handy. He knew how to fix things.
Now, in the Dominican Republic, Al, is this the same concept of a school that you're working with students? No, that's different.
This is water infrastructure, water distribution. And first phase is going to be drilling wells in the 2 communities that are about 5 miles apart. They'll have their own independent water systems. Actually, we're doing Cabeza de Toro first. And the plan is just to be able to get water to tap stand, a central location in the village, so they don't have to make that long trek. And then later phases will begin connecting to homes, so there will be further.
And how long have you been working on this or planning for this? What was your first contact year?
I think it was 2013.
Right, the first assessment.
So that's
trip.
Much newer than the Sierra Leone.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're hopeful we're going to be able to complete the first phase in 2017. We're still doing some of the funding approval, and we're working very closely through the local Rotary Club with a number of government and NGO agencies that are going to be doing different segments of the project. The mayor of a nearby large town has volunteered the heavy equipment to trench. And in Napa, which is a water, they're responsible for potable water, is going to do a segment and so forth. So that's why we're able to do, this is probably in excess of $500,000 U.S. infrastructure investment. We're able to do that with the 75,000 EWB segment by leveraging all these other partners.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And it's the project right now is to wind up with 2 wells?
2 wells and 2 distribution systems to those communities, and it'll be a gravity tank fed. We'll pump to the highest point storage tank and then rely on gravity. Electricity there, partially through our efforts, they now are on the electric grid, which simplifies the pumping aspect. The bad news is I believe there's typical uptime, even in the urban areas in Dominican, for electric is about 2/3.
So this is Dominican Republic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you have a lot of downtime, but if you pump when you have electric.
You pump when you have electricity, and then gravity always works. We do the same thing in Sierra Leone, except we have a solar-powered pump, and we pump it to the high point on the campus. And we pump it during the day. We fill up the tank, and so they have water 24/7. And they have told us many, many times that having running water at that school is, they say, no school has running water at the school.
The only school
in the whole region has running water. Yeah, yeah.
So
and it's 24/7 because it's designed so it'll.
So happy about that.
It'll always work.
Well, now, Al has been promoting something from the Dominican Republic that so far I don't think you're doing, Herb.
What's
and
that?
That is sending to the U.S. very great baseball players.
Yes, that's true. There are not too many baseball players from Sierra Leone. And we're actually looking into, I don't know if we have time, but we're actually looking into a baseball-related fundraiser next year.
Oh, actually this year.
This year, late this year.
Nelson Cruz is actually from the area, as was Tony Pena and so forth. I happen to be a baseball fan. So that's a side benefit.
Well, and that's the reason you're going to the Dominican Republic. You can't stay away from baseball.
Don't let that out. But, actually, I do want to get to see a game down there. I've seen some of the stadiums. Their season runs opposite the
It runs in our wintertime.
Right. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, we did work with these other partner agencies in the capital, Santo Domingo, and one of the interesting icebreakers was to talk about baseball. And it was an instant bond.
Yes, okay. Exactly. Cool. Let's go with the fundraiser.
All right. So I want to make sure that people are aware we're having a fundraiser for our projects both in Sierra Leone and in the Dominican Republic. As I mentioned, we're starting a new project in Sierra Leone, which is with the Matru Hospital, and which is really exciting. And we did an assessment trip just 2 or 3 months ago for that. The fundraiser will be on Sunday, April 30th, from 4 to 7 p.m. It'll be at the DeSales University Center. And if you're interested to register, go to our website, www.ewb-lvp.org. And the other thing I want to mention about it is we're going to have a very, very special guest at that fundraiser, and that's going to be the principal of the Centennial School, where he's coming over here, and he's been the principal now for the last 3 years, and the things have really changed for the better at the school through his leadership. School test scores have skyrocketed, and one of the things that has happened as a result of that is that there are many more students now wanting to go to that school. They're actually having to turn people away because they have so many people that want to go to that school. And so it'll be really exciting, and it'll be very special. It's his first time out of Sierra Leone. He's never been out of Sierra Leone in his
life. Well, believe it or not, gentlemen, our time is up here for Lehigh Valley Discourse for another time. I'm John Pierce. My guests this evening have been Herb Klotz, who is Rotary Liaison for Engineers Without Borders, and Al Ottinger, who is co-leader for the Dominican Republic Project. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Thank you, Neil Heaver, for your good work on the board. And until we meet again, remember to be gentle with your neighbor.